Rock and his men took control of the Silver Bullet within minutes and quickly opened up some of the supply cars, throwing whatever was inside out, and brought their hybrids and camels up a makeshift ramp and inside. They quickly got the train rolling again, with Reston pulling the levers in the engine car and Archer shoveling coal into the roaring boiler furnace that ran the great machine. Rock's men put on the uniforms of Russian officers and stood guard over their prisoners. The plan was for everything to remain the same, or at least the illusion of it. The officers would continue to sit at their dining tables and in their card rooms and look, to those who saw them as they passed through the various stations, as if they were just having fun enjoying the scenic route. The one remaining communications tech would broadcast to all the stations that they were on priority orders to go all the way to Washington without making a stop. That was the plan. Whether or not it would work was a different story. Once the train was rolling full speed again, Roxon and his crew relaxed a little.
You must have train robber chromosomes in your bloody genes. You pulled this thing off like a blooming master.
But without your help in the front car, I'd be pushing daisies at this very moment.
Huh? Hey, you're bloody right. I guess we just performed our heroics for the day then, didn't we? Let's break out the drinks. Where's the goddamn service around here?
As if hearing the words, a black face peered tentatively from a slightly open door at the near end of the car.
I hears you, sir. We's the service, but we ain't a-coming out unless you promise not to be shooting at us now. We just the cooks, waiters on this here train.
We're not gonna shoot anybody. Don't worry, we're just here for the ride.
The black man edged slowly forward toward them, followed by nearly two dozen others who had stuffed themselves into the kitchen unit when the train had slammed to a halt. The man in the lead of the nervous group walked up to Roxon and grinned widely, his lips pulling back to reveal all his teeth in a smile of subservience.
We's the porters, sir. We're working these trains for generations. We's glad to make ourselves available for your use. What would you fine gentlemen be wanting? Here's some menus. May I recommend the veal Prince Orlov or the escargot de fromage?
Well, the first thing I'd like is your name.
My name, sir, be Rufus Jones. And behind me is our chef, Mr. Raymond Washington.
Well, I'm pleased to meet both of you. I'm Ted Roxon. And just for your information, we're from the Free Fighters. This is Detroit Green, my right-hand man.
I'm pleased to meet you.
And you too, Mr. Green.
Well, Rufus, my traveling companions and I have decided to take a little pleasure jaunt through this great country. We've been fighting for so many years, never had a chance to take a vacation. You know how it is.
Oh, indeed, sir. I knows.
Right. So, just think of us as a few extra tourists. You know, taking in the sights. We'll be dining and playing cards with our Russian friends here. So, I want all of you to relax and act normal. This is just another trip, and I'm sure we'll all become fine friends by the end of it.
Well, now that sounds just fine, Mr. Roxon. And I hope we can make your journey a pleasant one that you will remember with fond memories in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Now, I'm sure my men are all starving. Hijacking trains really builds up an appetite. So why don't you serve them? And of course, any of these Russian gentlemen who would like something.
Mates! They've got beer! Of course it ain't no bloody Vic Bitter, but still good old Yank beer. Let's give it a try. Now, for food. Recommendations, Rock? I can't make kangaroos or koalas out of this blasted piece of paper here.
As the man said, the veal Prince Orlov is definitely the special of the day.
The fighters felt wonderful after the meal of some of the best food they had ever eaten, and from the fact that they had survived the assault. Things, for the moment, were going their way. The Russian passengers, strapped into their seats with belts, had never felt so humiliated in their lives. They burned with both a hatred for Roxon and the realization that they had to act civil, even nice, for the next 48 hours, or the man might kill them. Their faces seemed to actually jerk, the eyebrows throbbing, noses sniffing rapidly like rabbits, the lips trembling with repressed rage. Yet there was nothing, not a thing, they could do. They were to be mannequins for the rebels, things placed in the windows to make it all look real. The entire force changed into spare Russian uniforms so that they too could sit at the large picture windows and look at the world passing outside. But their guns were out, always trained on the Reds around them. Detroit didn't say a word, but rose after his meal and headed back to the kitchen.
Ah, there he is. Mr. Jones, you and me gotta have a little talk, pal, in private.
Is the service not to your liking, sir?
The service is just fine. It's just you and all them other men here that's the problem. Here, let's step into a more private area. Okay. What the hell are all of you acting like goddamn idiotic slaves for? Don't you know that slavery died with Abraham Lincoln?
Maybe there's more to all this than meets the eye, Detroit. Maybe there are other levels of operation going on that you know nothing about.
You can speak fine.
He walks. He talks. He cooks. He shines Russian shoes. And he hears things. Things that he passes on to an underground network in Washington. How the hell do you think all you glory boys out in the sticks are getting your intelligence?
I didn't...
Hell, man! You think I wouldn't love the chance to get out there and put my hands around a rifle butt and shoot some of these bastards? Do you have any idea what it takes? What we all go through to put on these masks? I go to my bed some nights in Detroit. I got tears. Tears that won't stop flowing because I feel so humiliated. And so you know what I do so I don't end up feeling like I'm turning into what they see as? I read, man. I read everything I can get my hands on so that I know, even if no one else does, that I'm an educated, civilized man. Those men out there know nothing beyond stuffing their mouths and pleasing their superiors, bastions of consumption and bureaucracy. I have read Shakespeare, Dickens, Chekhov, all the great minds of literature. No, Detroit, I make my own choices, control my own fate. It is those out there who will crumble into the dust heap of history. There. I've said my piece. Any more questions?
I'm sorry. I had no idea. There's nothing I can say. I salute you, sir.
Oh, cut the crap. We're all in this together. I'm not angry at you. If anything, I should be flattered that you care enough to get angry.
Are the other porters the same, or, all spying, risking their lives?
Every one of them.
Well, now I know. I'll tell the others so that they don't think.
Don't tell a soul! If your men know, and even one of them lets on, even by accident, that our whole cover is blown here, every one of us is finished, along with the free fighters' most valuable source of intelligence in the entire country. We know what we're doing. Every man here chose to be here. Didn't have to. What others think of us is no concern. What we do here, that is what matters. No one can know. Ever.
I could learn a lot from a man like you.
Well, stick around. I'm dying to know what's happening out there. Now, let's head back. So you'd like to cut a meat I showed you, sir? You won't? I serve the best of you, Mr. Roxon. Well, that's just fine. That'll be our little secret.
Our little secret. Absolutely.
Roxon sat at the empty end of the dining car as the rest of his men played cards and killed time. They grabbed handfuls of medals from Russian chests to bet with and went hard and heavy at five-card stud. Good, let them relax. The worst was yet to come, and they all knew it, touching a dial on the side so it slowly lowered him until he was lying almost horizontal. He turned and looked out the window at America speeding by. He was used to being down there in the bushes, plodding along. But from here, the view was vastly different. The countryside flew by in great patches like a jigsaw puzzle of beauty and death. Fertile fields filled for miles with rainbows of flowers, animals, birds. Then stretches of nothing just as long. Occasionally, a towering crater rose in the distance. A monument to the madness and stupidity of those who had ruled the world 100 years before. It angered Roxon whenever he thought about the old days. How could they have been so short-sighted? Hadn't they seen where it was all heading? The legacy they were going to leave for all future generations. And now they were all gone, every one of them who had brought on the Great War. And it was Rock and his men who would spend their lives fighting and dying to put the pieces back together again. The silver bullet sped like an arrow through stop after stop as angry Russian officers shook their fists at the passing train. But the communications officer, under the constant guns of at least two free fighters, just kept sending out the same message.
Priority one. The silver bullet has been ordered by President Zhabnov personally to head for Washington without making another stop.
With the foul-up in communications around the country because of Kilov's nationwide attacks, they got away with it. The KGB colonel was aiding Roxen's passage without knowing it. At the end of their second day on the train, Rock got a call on the train's intercom. It was Reston, still driving the damn thing without a break.
What's up?
Well, according to this computer thingamajig that's been feeding out our coordinates and speed, we're gonna be hitting the outskirts of D.C. in about 2.5 hours. Just thought I'd let you know. Now, better start getting things together back there.
Will do. How's it going up there?
It's going. Thanks to this mountain man, Archer. Seems to like shoveling coal into the furnace, watching it glow. I gotta slow him down so we don't take off the tracks.
All right. I'll let you know just what the plans are. Over and out. All right, guys. We gotta get started on getting rid of all these Reds here. They're just gonna get in the way, to say the least, when we get to D.C.
I got an idea. Why don't we just put them in mailbags? There's pickup hoists all along the way. Might be a fitting farewell to unwanted baggage.
I love it. You wanna run the show?
Better believe it.
Detroit got some of the other men together, and taking the Russian officers five at a time, they prepared their little special deliveries. First, they stripped them down to their underwear, then tied them up, and squeezed them into the spacious mail and delivery bags that filled the mail car of the train. They found they could pack three of them in at a time, though the accommodations were a bit on the small side. They got the first bag together and rolled it toward the open sliding door of the car.
There! I see one coming up now!
I got it!
Mail car!
Detroit was just able to throw the sack over the hook waiting for it. The free fighters in the cars behind pressed their faces to the glass to see the sack swinging wildly back and forth, nearly 10 feet above the ground. Over the next hour, they loaded up every one of the Reds into bags and sent them flying out the side via the Russian Postal Service. They spun wildly, legs and arms kicking within their confinement. The thought of what would happen when these top brass were found in such compromised situations made the free fighters break out into laughter again and again. They had probably just ended more Red Army careers than they had in most of their shooting battles.
All right, men. It's time to figure out what's gonna happen once we get to Washington, D.C. I don't think we should actually arrive at Union Station. There's no telling what kind of welcome Zhabnov's non-stop train will get. Any ideas?
Well, there's a huge junction of tracks from all over the country, about 10 miles outside the capital, in an old town called Kensington. They built miles of track there after the war, wrecked and abandoned trains the whole way. We could hide out there and find a way in some other way.
That's a great idea, Detroit. How come you know so much about trains all of a sudden?
My dad loved them. He had a bunch of old books on the rail system.
Would you happen to know enough about the junction to be able to draw us a map?
Now?
Anytime, but soon. You can head off, try and jog your memory if you want to.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I'll see what I can do.
Detroit handed Reston an incredibly detailed map of the juncture just 10 minutes later. With the maps, Reston was able to chart his way to a nice little niche for the Silver Bullet between 2-mile-long freight trains. Their wheels had turned to squares over the years, but their basic frames were still intact. Names like Southern Pacific, Union Pacific, Southern Rail, and Great Northwest could still be read on the sides of the long boxcars. Their shells empty, but for insects and mice. When they were all parked and the engines had been shut off, Roxen called the entire team together and outlined the plan.
We'll divide into two units. 10 men will stay here, the rest will come with me. We're gonna need this train to get the hell out of here, so I want it fully guarded at all times. Oh, and scout around. See if there's some heavy-duty firepower on the train. Something we can use to knock out any Russian posses. The Brids and the Camels are staying here, too. If we're gonna bluff our way through the back streets of D.C. in red uniforms, mangy beasts from the other side of the world won't help. And porters, thank you. You've been most hospitable to my men and I. Now you'd better all get the hell out of here, because within the next few hours, I have a feeling this place could become a battleground.
Oh, we knows how to take care of ourselves, Mr. Roxon. We lives just down the rail there.
He pointed a long, wrinkled finger off toward row after row of rusting hulks of trains.
Got ourselves nice little shacks we don't build out of these old cars here. Ain't no one wants them nohow.
Detroit wished more than anything that they could reveal themselves in their true light. It just wasn't fair. To suffer so much, devote one's life to the cause of liberation, and not even to have anyone know about it.
Now, y'all take care, you hear? And don't hesitate to come see us again.
The Doomsday Warrior, wearing a full brown Russian Lieutenant General's uniform with 17 ribbon medals stretched across his broad chest, crawled up the side of the embankment that led to the thoroughfare just above. Behind him, the combined American-Aussie forces shifted uncomfortably in their own itchy red outfits, loosening the tight collars which choked them.
Truck's coming. That's our ride.
But how are we gonna... Wait, Rock!
Shh! Rock walked out on the road as the truck came bearing down. Stopping in the middle of the road, he spread his feet apart, stood stock still, and held his right arm up.
What in the name of trouble? Oh, Lieutenant General, I had no idea.
Yes, yes, I'll be needing this truck. What's your cargo?
Ammunition, sir, for the frontline forces that are fighting KGB commandos on the eastern side of the city.
You will please have your men unload it and dump it in the street, Sergeant.
But Lieutenant...
You are aware of the state of emergency, no?
I didn't...
And the punishments?
Throw out all the cargo now!
Very good. I'm taking this vehicle for transportation.
But, sir...
My patience is wearing thin.
Yes, sir.
The Free Fighters jumped in the empty truck, Detroit and Archer bending over at the back of the bunch to avoid being seen. Though with the Reds' eyes fixed straight ahead, there wasn't much for them to see. Rock went to the passenger seat, with Lieutenant Boyd acting as his driver.
Well?
Drive.
Bloody fucking incredible!
I once read about something your country had called Academy Awards. Golden statue they gave their best movie actor each year. And matey, you just won one.
It's not too hard, really. Just keep your head down and mumble orders. And speaking of orders... Hey, Detroit!
Yeah, Rock?
You know the way to the Octagon?
Yeah. Well, we should head due south down Connecticut Avenue until we hit DuPont Circle. It'll be about 10 miles. We'll turn onto New Hampshire Avenue and go southwest from there. I'll give you more directions when we're closer.
Detroit, how do you know the streets?
A little bird told me.
On the way, the Free Fighters came to several red checkpoints. Roxon just gave the guards nasty looks, and they quickly opened their roadblocks, letting the transport truck through. There were battles going on all over the city, flames shooting up from every direction. It seemed as if World War III were being fought all over again, without the nukes, here in the nation's capital. Kilov had obviously thrown caution to the wind. His forces had to be outnumbered by the Red Army 100-1. The only way he could have hoped to succeed was through surprise, and then take the reins of power before the High Command knew what was happening. If that was the plan, the gamble didn't seem to be going too well in Washington. They had been fighting for days, and the Army seemed to be holding its own. For the first time in his life, Rock wished the Red Army well. For he knew Kilov, had met him personally. And he was not a man Roxon wanted to see holding supreme power here in America. The fat Jobnov had been a tyrant, but a stupid one. As bad as things were, the Doomsday Warrior knew they would be incomparably worse under his KGB usurper.
All right, we've hit New Hampshire Avenue. Where to now?
Stay on it for a mile. Now, I know it's near Washington Circle.
Oh, I think I see it.
I bloody well hope you can see it.
What? It's already visible?
Yeah. I don't think it's near Washington Circle. It is Washington Circle.
Huh. Jobnov probably had it built there for its occult history. If you look at a map of D.C., the Washington Circle is one point of a pentagram. One of the others is the White House. And the others are Scott Circle, Logan Circle, and...
Detroit, once again, why do you know this?
Well, that I've read about it in a book. Oh, hey, did you know that if you take an old-style American dollar...
Another time, Green.
The newly built Octagon was a 5-block-wide, 10-story-tall, chrome and glass structure. The border of the complex was covered in steel mesh. At the moment, it didn't look like it was under attack, which meant that either the Red Army had fought off the KGB, or they had already taken it over.
Now we just gotta get our bloody little nippers in there.
Yeah, that's it. Get our nippers in. We'll say we're bringing in some captured free fighters, and we're just aching to get them strapped into a mindbreaker. All right, men. We need 10 of you to strip back to their fighting clothes. Make it look like you're tied up.
Boyd drove slowly around the edge of the fence, giving them time in back. After several minutes, they came to a wide, double-gated checkpoint where 5 guards walked over with submachine guns under their arms. Even seeing rocks and stripes, the head guard kept his stance.
There's a war on, comrade. What are you doing here? We're closed for the day.
Whoever you are, I suggest you first apologize to me and secondly, you open that gate. We have a load of free fighter prisoners that I'm sure the commander of this fine structure will be quite disappointed to lose.
Yes, sir. Sorry, sir. I forgot myself in this time of crisis. I hope you won't report me, sir.
We'll see. We'll see.
You got more balls than a platypus penned up with 5 duckbills and heat.
The facility was so immense that arrowed signs filled the sides of the roads that led off in all directions, stating which particular sectors of the fort lay where. At last, they saw a prisoner intake arrow and followed it, coming after several yards to a rampway with more arrows.
Go ahead in. We'll have to play it by ear from here on in.
From here on in? Maybe. You've been playing it by ear this whole bloody trip.
The ramp led them to a loading platform with a few bored guards sitting on folding chairs at each end, half asleep.
Well, here we are. You ready?
As ready as I'm gonna be. All right, you fucking free fighters. We're opening up. Everybody out! Out!
Once the American prisoners were in a line, Brock walked over to one of the seated guards.
10 prisoners for processing, code 7 priority. I am to take them myself.
The Russian guard, glad to not have to do any more work, passively waved them along. Roxanne wondered if they really needed to even go through the trouble of pretending they were prisoners. Rock led the prisoner detail through the tiled hallways. Zhabnov had obviously spent a fortune on the building. He looked around at his team, their eyes darting everywhere, searching for a trap.
Keep cool, boys. Just pretend you're really a Russian. You're happy to be home after being out in the wastelands. Smile, but if the shit hits the fan, blast everything in sight. Maybe past these doors is a map.
Through the doors was an intersection of all the main halls on the floor, 8 of them. Heading off into the 8 sections of the octagon, they must be dead center of the building, in the spoke of the wheel. Rock turned around and around, trying to sense with his mutant ESP abilities which was the right way. But he could feel nothing, not a twinge of a direction.
Anyone have the slightest idea which way to go?
Perhaps I can be of assistance, Mr. Roxon.
Huh?
How very rude of you, Mr. Roxon, to come into my new base of operations and pull a gun on me. But what's this? It seems you've brought me a gift. Prisoners. Yes, we have plenty of accommodations.
Roxon debated on the sheerest second on whether to go for it. But they didn't have a chance. Outnumbered 4-1 against submachine guns, they'd be dead instantly. He couldn't let them all throw their lives away like that. As long as they were alive, there was a way out.
Throw them down.
It's so good of you to drop by.
So you've taken over DC. This won't last, Kilov. Vasily will bring his armies here, and all us Americans will have to do is just sit back and watch the Red Bear destroy itself.
I will make it last. I fought this game through more steps than you can ever imagine. Ah, but we have so much to talk about.
Langford, Kim, are they...
Oh, I assure you, they are fine. For the moment. You will get to see them. When they are strapped next to you in the Mindbreaker, you shall all get to observe each other's brains dripping from your skulls. A sight, I'm sure, fortunately for you, you will soon forget.
You're mad to attack the whole damn country, you know.
Mad? Yes, of course I'm mad. They have always called us that. All great men are mad. Yeah, we have to be. The rest are sheep. Without minds, without thoughts or daring. It is only the mad who have the vision to go beyond, to rise to new heights of...
Murder.
Such an antiquated phrase, murder. Come now, Mr. Ultimate American. I thought you and I disagreed on a higher philosophical level.
There is no higher for you, only lower.
Well, as much as I would love to stand here and talk all day, I do have pressing business elsewhere. Taking over a country is such a complex task. I'm sure you can understand. But we shall all meet again very soon, and shall have plenty of time to, well, explore your thoughts at a much deeper level. Put them in the main holding cells. Double security, except for Roxon. Put him in maximum cell number one. When I tell you, I want him, the girl, and that doddering idiot of a president brought to mind center number four. Most excellent. Until this evening, then. And please, do let me know if there are any problems with the accommodations or the surface.
A friend of yours?
Shut up, scum. You are in my charge now. There will be no talking, no movement, no anything without asking me or one of my men. Punishment for disobeying will be painful and instantaneous.
Oh, I just love those black leather outfits you're wearing. I'd love to know where I could buy one for a night out on the town.
Anyone else? No? Then let's go. Rock, you're coming with me.
Where are you taking my men?
I would be more concerned with where we're taking you. Step in, and don't get any ideas. We're taking you to our maximum security cell.
The door opened to reveal a dimly lit concrete room with a transparent thick plastic box in the middle. The polycarbonate cell had one door and was locked by a series of gears, deadbolts, chains, and magnets.
This will be your new home. You might be here a while. Go on, get inside.
And if I don't?
Kilov wants you alive, fool, but he didn't say anything about keeping all of your limbs. So ends the great American free fighter. I thought you were the one who survived it all. The unkillable one. Isn't that what the slave rabble call you?
As one of America's greatest fighters once said, it ain't over till it's over.
It's over, Roxon. It's over. Guards?
At once, four KGB guards walked into the cell with Roxon.
Up against the wall, free fighter.
Rock rose slowly and walked over to the far wall, where he stood still and waited. Two of the KGB soldiers came over and cuffed his hands and feet to shackles that came out of the wall. When he was completely secure, the chief of this particular batch of killers walked in slowly, looking around as if curious about the cell. He meandered over to Roxon and looked him straight in the eyes.
This? I think this will be fun.
The Doomsday Warrior had known this was coming from the second they had walked in. Fists and feet rained in on Rock from every quarter, and try as he might, he could do barely anything to avoid them. Chained on four sides, he lacked any mobility, and was as helpless as he had ever been in his life. Their faces were contorted, eyes bulging, spittle spraying from their open mouths as they flailed at him. There was no way to defend himself, so the Doomsday Warrior let every muscle in his body go limp and put himself into a meditative state to circumvent the pain. Still, he was conscious, and though detached from the ripping sensations that hammered away at him, it was an odd feeling to know that one's body was being smashed as if by jackhammers, while one watched through a trance of anesthetization. But at last, the death shirts had had enough. Or had grown tired from all the blows they'd thrown and pulled back from the apparently unconscious free fighter dangling like the dead from his chains.
I know you're alive, Ted Roxon. All you stinking rebels are expert at playing possum. You don't even feel pain like we do you? I swear, you're not even really human. All right, men, let's leave this fool so we can think of all those he has failed.
Roxon came to out of a spinning hole of blackness. He opened his eyes and for a moment forgot where he was. But the throbbing pain that covered his body and the chains around his hands and feet quickly brought him back to a rather depressing reality. There were three guards with assault rifles, the likes of which Rock had never seen before, and they all stared at him with murder in their eyes. They would have liked nothing more than a reason to shoot their prisoner. An hour later, the KGB guard came back.
Come with me.
Already? I thought you said I'd be here a while.
Plans have changed. It's time for you to die. Get up. Don't even think about attacking me. Hold out your hands. Good. Colonel Kilov asked me personally to convey his apologies that he has not been able to keep this evening's appointment with you. But he will be finished soon, and he is greatly looking forward to your meeting.
They marched Rock back down the corridor and to the elevator, taking him down two floors. He was deposited in another, larger cell, the holding pen for those about to experience the exquisite pain-giving abilities of the Mindbreaker.
Soon, very soon, you will experience the Mindbreaker. You shall not be disappointed.
I certainly hope not. I've heard so many wonderful things about it.
The black shirts marched off again, leaving five guards who immediately sat down and began playing cards as soon as their superiors had left. Roxon looked around the cell he was in. There weren't any windows, chairs, outcroppings, loose rocks, or anything else he could use. He paced the cell, looking for a way out.
No! Hold me!
Kim! What if...
Stand back, scum! Good. You're learning obedience.
Kim!
You'll be picked up in due time.
Shh. It's all right. I'm here now. We're together.
The cell guards watched Kim cry at first, getting a kick out of the melodrama, but grew bored and stepped back to their card game. At last, there were no more tears, and she stepped back, her eyes wide as a frightened deer.
Oh, Rock, what they've done to me, I...
Shh, it's okay. We'll get out of here somehow. Your father, the president, is he...
Oh, Rock, they've hurt him bad. The Mindbreaker, they've been taking him there every day. I don't even know if he's alive.
She seemed to calm down momentarily, and she looked deep into his eyes with such intensity that it was as if she were trying to burn her way into his soul.
I've wanted you so bad, Rock. Wanted to hold you once more before I died. Touch you.
I'm here, Kim. I'm here.
We're dead, Rock.
No, we're not. There's still...
Shh! Don't lie to me, my love. We both know what awaits us. But now that you're here, I'm no longer afraid. In my prayers, I had asked only that I see you once more, and they were answered.
Kim stepped back, looking at him. His face, his body, hardly daring to believe that it was really him. She glanced over through the bars and saw that the guards were embroiled in their cards, totally oblivious to their prisoners.
Rock, make love to me. Once more, before we're gone.
It seems like we're always meeting this way.
The Doomsday Warrior remembered the first time they had met, behind bars. They had made love then, and Roxon had instantly fallen for her ivory skin, her pixie blonde hair, her scent, taste, touch. Her eyes were wide with a mad desire. In the very jaws of death, she wanted to feel the highest pleasure of life, wanted to cling to this earth before she returned to the dust from which all things are born.
It doesn't matter where we are, my love. I would kiss you in the midst of the fires of hell and wouldn't even feel them if your lips were on mine.
Without another word, she stripped off her shirt and khaki pants. She stood before him naked, giving him the beauty, the art of her perfect body. Her breasts seemed to swell in anticipation, her face flushed with desire. She boldly put her hands out and undid his pants, letting them fall to the greasy, blood-splattered floor in a heap. She kneeled down and began working on him, readying him. Rock could smell the perfume of her aroused sex. He looked toward the corner where the guards were playing cards. Not a one was looking up. They seemed to be sharing a bottle of vodka. He reached down and put his hands around her, lifting her up to him as if she were as light as a feather. He grabbed her behind each of her creamy thighs as she guided the long spear of flesh into her parted wet lips. Her head sunk onto his shoulder as he went into her, and she wrapped her legs around his waist, locking them both together. He began slowly at first, increasing their passion as they continued. They couldn't make a sound for fear of the guards, and kept their lips tightly shut as Rock pulled her even closer to him. She seemed to suddenly go into an almost animalistic frenzy as waves of sensation streamed up from her core, grinding against him, crushing her breasts against his muscled chest. Roxon felt his manhood grow even more rigid and grabbed her buttocks, pulling her against him until they could be no closer. His eyes closed as he felt the approach, pumping into her with powerful thrusts. As he peaked, her whole body went rigid and then jerked wildly against him, pushing closer, ever closer, as if she were trying to take him all into her. Every bit of him, they merged into one being for a moment, joined together in mindless bliss.
What the hell is going on here?
Still locked together, they both turned their heads, dizzy from their mutual passion. Colonel Kilov stood peering through the bars, a look of purest hatred in his dark, pin-pricked eyes.
Shoot these idiot guards! Idiots! And now you, Roxon, you think you are so clever, but now I shall have the final word. Perhaps this will be even more fun than I had anticipated, for I shall have your little girlfriend here watch as your brain is melted from your very skull. Yes, take them both to the Mindbreaker, and we shall all have a most entertaining finish to this evening.
They were taken to a large room on the first floor, filled with rows of the brainwashing machines, and strapped down in the plastic chairs of the devices, facing each other.
Yes, perfect. Now, we shall all be able to experience Mr. Roxon's demise. Begin.
Yes, yes. Let me check your straps. Yes, properly fastened. Now, the globe. This hemisphere must be positioned exactly so that the probes can do their work at maximum efficiency. Ah, there we go.
Two ice-pick-thin pieces of metal lowered themselves from the innards of the Mindbreaker, stopping fractions of an inch from the free fighter's head.
Now, to charge.
The twin slivers of steel lit up at the ends with brilliant emerald dots of light.
Ready, sir?
Yes, yes. Go ahead.
The Mindbreaker! That shock knocked it over!
Who have you brought with you, Free Fighter?
We're under attack!
From his vantage point, Rock saw the door to the Mindbreaking chamber blow apart, and a squad of heavily armed men rush into the room. Rock's eyes widened in amazement. It was the porters, dressed all in black, with rifles and submachine guns in their hands, and big packs on their backs. They looked nothing like their former subservient selves, but fierce, powerful, standing tall, and moving with the speed of trained fighters.
Thought we might find you here, Mr. Roxon.
Kilov lay on the floor, trembling, the drugs in his system making his heart race like an engine. He shot angry looks at his men, as if telling them to go for their weapons. But with so much firepower trained on them, not one dared make a move, even on command of the skull.
Here, let me get you out of here. There you go.
Thank you, my friend.
Not a problem. Guys never paid for the food you ate, so we figured we'd come collect. This lady a friend?
That she is. Kim, I'd like you to meet...
Introductions can be made later. We gotta get out of here. The men are all over the building laying down plastique. They'll never torture another person here, I can tell you that. Here you go. The two subs have a full clip each, and there's enough plastique in there to blow a whole side of this place out. You got 4 minutes, 37 seconds to get out of here. We're gonna get your pals out. Rendezvous is by the truck at the front gate, okay?
Yeah. And, thanks. Thanks to all of you. I had a feeling there was more to all of you than met the eye.
Believe me, it's an honor to work alongside a man like you. You give us all hope in these dark times.
Rufus looked over at the dozen or so KGBers cowering on the floor, and their master Kilov trying to squirm behind a table.
What do you want to do with this scum?
I'll handle them.
Sure thing. You got 4 minutes exactly, Roxon. Let's go, men!
Rock immediately walked over to the KGB leader, who covered his head with his arms, as if that would somehow ward off the impending attack. Kim covered the guards with a second submachine gun, ready to pull the trigger at the slightest motion.
You heard the man. We've got just a few minutes, so let's not dally, okay? Take a seat.
Rock threw Kilov into one of the remaining mindbreakers, immediately pulling the headpiece down.
No, Roxon. I'll do whatever you want. Anything.
That's right. You will do what I want. Where's the president?
He's alive. Just 4 doors down this corridor, I swear. We only did preliminary drilling. He still has his mind.
Which is more than I can say for you. Shit. The explosions must have shorted the electricity. Shit, there's only 3 minutes.
But Rock, you can't let them get away with...
Don't worry, I'm not.
The Doomsday Warrior extracted one of the little packets of plastique from the backpack Rufus had given him, set the timer for 5 seconds, and walked through the blown open door.
Goodbye, Kilo. Run!
Is he...
If he's not, he will be in 3 minutes. Come on, the fourth door is just ahead of us. Let's go get your dad. This is it.
Rock swung the sub back and forth, ready to fire. But no Russians were in the room. Just one American. Charles Langford, the president of the Reunited States of America, with his mouth hanging open, dripping green drool.
Father! Dad! It's me! Kim!
But there was no response. His eyes were vacant as a cow's, staring, focused straight ahead. His scalp had been burnt, and 2 little holes had been drilled in the center of his head.
Rock! Rock! He's gone!
I'm sorry, Kim, but we've got to get out of here. We're running out of time.
He lifted Langford under the armpits and got him standing. But the man was obviously unable to walk, unable to do anything. Rock took the pack from his back and handed it to Kim.
Hold on to this. We may need it.
He threw the president over his shoulder and started back to the entrance. They reached the central hub of the Octagon, which was a wreck, bodies everywhere, covered with concrete and dust from the crumbling ceiling and walls. They tore down the long hall, with Rock carrying the president over his right shoulder.
Ahead, to the right!
Kim jerked her head around and saw 2 black shirts aiming Kalashnikovs from a doorway. She was ready for them.
Thanks! Good aim!
Rock and Kim shot forward through the smoke, and at last reached the main door, where a whole pile of death heads lay blown apart, heads, arms, legs lying unattached. They flew through and out into the cool night. Rock saw the gate ahead and the porters already standing around it with the rest of the Rock team. They waved at him frantically to run faster, pointing at their watches. But running at full speed while carrying a 185-pound man on your back is not the easiest of endeavors. They were about 100 feet from the high mesh fence when the Octagon went up. Dust and debris filled the air, shooting out in every direction in a tornado of rubble, covering the free fighters with a coating of thick, gritty particles. A funnel of writhing smoke rose up into the sky, higher and higher, forming an almost mushroom-shaped cloud that hovered over the devastation below like a funeral shroud. When the shrapnel had stopped flying, Rock and Kim slowly rose from the ground, dusted themselves off, and walked over to the rest of the team, who were also lifting themselves up. Rock carried the president in his arms.
Is the president...
He's not dead. He's not alive either. They got to do a bit of their handiwork on him. I just don't know.
Well, let's get him back to the train. The whole city must have heard this explosion. They're going to investigate.
The fighting forces loaded up into the truck the porters had brought and headed off into the night, leaving behind them the biggest piece of burning wreckage on Earth. In the wreckage of the octagon, a hand wriggled up through a covering of black ash. Then the arm broke free. Like a corpse rising from its grave, digging itself free of its own resting place, a body covered in thick gray ash clawed its way out of the earth. The thing sat up, trying to rub the soot from its eyes so it could see, and it saw only death. Colonel Kilov sat up, blood dripping from every part of his battered flesh. He was slightly amazed to be alive. The moment Roxen had tossed the package of high explosives into the mine-breaking room, Kilov had run. His paranoid propensity to check the closest escape exit of every building he went into had paid off this time. For the others, all lay dead, crushed to a pulp that couldn't even be buried. But the KGB commander had somehow managed to make it out the back, running as fast as his trembling, drug-propelled legs could carry him. And he had made it. Barely, getting 100 feet away from the octagon before it erupted. He tried to stand up, but couldn't. His right leg was broken. The pain didn't matter, as Kilov thrived on pain, even his own. But the destruction of the octagon, where he had placed his top commanding officers, as well as the escape of Roxen and the president, was another story. The KGB commander looked up at the rising cloud of what had once been the immense structure, looked up at the black ocean of smoke and fire, and saw death, its eyeless sockets looking down, searching for souls to carry off. And the colonel's own eyes met the fiery face of the destroyer.
Hear me, great one! Let me live! Let me continue so that I may deliver the wretched ones who have done this to you! Look in my heart! For I am your servant. I live only to carry out your promises of eternal pain.
On the brink of madness, the black shirt commander raised his fist and shook it up at the blackness. And far above, he saw the face of death wrapped in a shawl of human flesh. And he saw it nod yes. The porters took the free fighter Aussie force they had helped to escape back to the railroad junction where the Silver Bullet sat between two rusting freight trains, undetected. The team got out and stood in front of the bullet-shaped engine, looking at the spies who had saved their lives.
We owe our lives to you. I know what this rescue has done for you. It's blown your cover.
Forget it, Roxen. Man's got to make decisions about his life. We all decided that there wasn't many more important things than saving the President of the United States and Ted Roxen. If you had both died, well, there wouldn't be a hell of a lot of hope left in this land. And hope, that's what a man needs even more than food or water.
But your jobs, what the hell will you all do now? I mean, working these trains is your life.
Oh, I don't think we'll be losing our jobs. Once this whole thing blows over, there'll be so many conflicting reports and exaggerated stories, they won't be able to tell what's what. Plus, once they run these trains again, they'll be needing our services. We've all got a dozen identities each. We'll be riding the rails again in time, giving information to those that need it. Looks like it worked out today, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Thanks, Rufus. Would have never found the Octagon without you.
Just doing my job. Now, till this is over, I got a lot of reading to catch up on. Might be a while, so I was thinking Dostoevsky. That guy wrote by the pound.
The free fighters and Aussies boarded the train, which Reston had all fired up and ready to go. The Silver Bullet pulled out, the chrome chimney sending up a cloud of smoke as the warriors of freedom waved goodbye to the porters standing motionless by the tracks. the luxury train quickly reached top cruising speed, and behind them, the free fighters could see the battle for Washington between the Red Army and Keyloff's forces continuing as artillery barrages shook the city. But with the dreaded KGB commander dead, or so they believed, surely the Black Shirt Army would crumble. The president was put in a sleeping car attended by Kim, who kept putting cold compresses on his head, unsure of how to even begin treating the damage that had been done to his brain. Ashton, the mind-breaking expert that Rock had brought along, examined Langford.
Anything, Ashton?
I don't know, Roxon. I've come across some men who have recovered on their own accord, but it's not looking good. The main problem are all the different kinds of mind-breakers. Since Zhabnov funded the research into controlling people's actions, there have been all kinds of tweaks done to the things. We just don't have the equipment here to work with. Maybe in Century City.
I'll do what you can until then.
I will, but perhaps the worst thing is that he'll live. The functions of the brain that cover breathing, involuntary reflexes, and the like are all working. The man could survive 20, even 30 years. But whether or not he'll ever be able to think even one thought again, that's in God's hands.
Do your best, but don't tell Kim. If she asks, just tell her to talk to me. I'll be the one to tell her.
Sure thing, Rock.
Oh, by the way, while we were out, did you find anything on this train worth using? Anything big league?
Ah, yes. You'd better believe it. The last two cars are filled with anti-aircraft batteries and even some mini ground-to-air missiles. Ain't quite sure how to operate them, but...
We'll work it out.
This is pretty good, McLaughlin.
Yeah, that's my specialty. Black pudding.
This is black pudding?
Chen, Detroit. Ashton found some heavy weaponry in the back. We may be needing it.
Will do, Rock.
Chen and Detroit headed back to the mobile artillery, just in case. The rest of the squad ate everything McLaughlin cooked up for them. Infiltrating and demolishing an enemy stronghold had built up quite an appetite. The silver bullet shot out past the suburbs of the capital. Little boxes of houses, homes to the upper echelons of the Red Hierarchy and their families. They sped past the huge concrete buildings that housed the factories where slave workers were paid only with bowls of gruel and died by the hour. Past the 5-megaton crater about 20 miles from the city, its ugly rim tall and jagged, a monument from the past in all its dark glory. Past it all and toward the west, which for all its cratered and poisoned terrain was home to Rock and the Free Fighters. They were about 40 miles out of Washington when Rock got an urgent call over the train's intercom from Reston.
We got problems. Now, I don't even know quite how to use the damn thing, but the radar scope up here is showing something coming after us. No, a whole bunch of somethings. Then Rock, they're moving fast.
Just keep her going. Give it everything you got. We'll do what we can at this end.
Sure, Rock. And it's sure been nice working with you.
It's not over yet, Reston. Just keep going. Try and keep them from us as long as possible. Chen, Detroit, you figure out those doohickeys back there?
No sweat, Rock. We've used all this stuff before in one form or another. The main thing is figuring out how the hell to get the roofs of the cars to rise up. They're built on some kind of hydraulic system, so we can shoot the damn things out.
Well, figure it out fast, because we've got company coming. Eating time's over, men. They're on our trail and closing fast.
What do you want us blithes to do?
We're gonna have to make a stand of it. We'll be sitting ducks if we just let them blow us apart. Get every bit of heavy stuff you have, mortars, machine guns, whatever, and get them up on the roofs.
The men jumped up from their tables and got to work, passing the equipment out the back doors and up on top of the three cars near the center of the train. Within minutes, they were ready, sitting high, waiting for the enemy to show.
They're coming! A whole fleet of them!
Fire when you think you can hit them. They wouldn't have flown this whole way if they didn't know we were here. That's good. McLaughlin, fire a mortar. Good shot! Everybody, fire!
Action! Beetle, get down!
Three of the Aussies flew off in a geyser of flame. They fell from the speeding train, hitting the grating and rolling end over end, bloody corpses, dead before they came to a stop.
Everybody keep firing! I'm gonna check on our cavalry!
Get it going back there.
Our farm car ain't doing shit to these bastards.
We got it, man! Just figure the damn thing out! Just hold on a few more seconds! Hold on!
We can't hold on, we're dying up there!
Rock headed back up to rejoin his men. If they were going to die, he would be with them, fighting down to the last breath in his body.
Come on, Detroit!
I'm almost done. Cyrillic's not an easy language to type, okay?
Yeah! You did it!
The roof above the two slowly opened up, parting in the middle and filling the floor with sunlight. Each man stood in front of a battery of blinking lights and radar screens, constantly informing them of their many targets. Both free fighters had spent hours perusing captured Russian weapons manuals back in Century City, and what had seemed like a waste of precious time was now about to pay off in spades. They lined up the nearest craft until the blue dots on their computerized attack systems were dead center of a series of concentric circles.
I've got the lock.
Me too! Fire!
Two Annihilator missiles flew up from their tubes straight into the air. The laser-guided missiles rose about 200 feet and then turned on a dime, shooting straight for two separate helicopters.
All right!
Yeah!
Ready for another? Here you go!
The tide of battle turned quickly as the chopper fleet dove like maddened birds, twisting and diving in every direction, trying to outrun the swarm of missiles. But the Reds had built their air defense systems well. After all, they had to protect the Russian brass that rode the Silver Bullet, and every missile that was fired found what it was seeking. At last, there was but one of the jet craft left, and it came swooping down on the train, just 20 feet above the ground.
Yeah! You think you're hot shit!
Shit!
Chan, I'm out! What about you?
I'm just fine, Detroit.
The flame-spitting tube shot right into the spinning rotor of the chopper.
I thank you all for saving this codger's life, but that last helicopter crashed on the rail. The rails themselves are torn to shreds. I'm afraid this ride is over. Thank you for choosing Russia Rail, and I sure do hope we get to ride one again.
The free fighters scrambled down from their perches and quickly unloaded the brids and camels, bringing the animals down a wooden ramp. They loaded up their own equipment, tied President Langford, his eyes as dead as midnight shadows, atop one of the hybrids so he wouldn't fall off, and headed off, leaving a trail of burning helicopter hulks for miles behind them. Within minutes, the predators that lived in the woods bordering the tracks came hesitantly out of the tree line, sniffing the air. It was thick, pungent with the scent of fresh blood. Lots of it. They would all eat well today. The Free Fighter Aussie Force rode hell-bent for leather through the thick woods ahead, wanting to get as far as possible from the wreckage before the Russians sent yet another armada to destroy them. Though on this day of destruction for the Russian Empire, Roxen somehow thought they might have had enough. They rode for hours, not daring to stop until they were 20 miles away from the rails, changing their trail a dozen times, losing themselves in the thick forests of what had been Harper's Ferry, at the intersection of Maryland, Virginia, and West Virginia. Roxen held his hand up, and the free fighters dismounted to let the Brits rest a few minutes. But the Aussies stayed atop their beasts.
Well, it looks like we're gonna be heading off now, Yanks. We done what we came here for? Helped you blokes out a bloody bit of trouble, I dare say.
That you did. But I thought you'd be coming back with us to Century City. We could use men like you. Whatever I said when we first met, I take it all back now. You blokes are the equal of any man here.
We appreciate your words, Yank. But hold up. Sorry, You know, we've been doing so many heroic acts lately. We're almost out of brew. I'm afraid we'll be heading off. Give our services to whoever needs them. And who knows? Maybe in our travels we'll find a whole buried warehouse of ale. A brewery. Just waiting to feed his buried treasure to thirsty lips.
The Aussies made their farewells and headed off to the north, quickly vanishing among the trees. The Doomsday Warrior stood there for a moment, thinking of all the carnage of the past week. Then he turned to Kim, who had come up alongside him, and held her close to him. This round was won, but the fight would go on and on, until the enemy was vanquished, until America was free once more. Doomsday Warrior. American Defiance. Adapted and directed by Dan Smith. Dialogue editing and digital effects design by Johann Detweiler. Narrated by James Konacek. With performances by David Coyne, Terrence Aselford, Karen Carbone, Tim Carlin, Elliot Dash, Michael Glenn, Christopher Graybill, James Lewis, Dylan Lynch, Thomas Penny, Richard Rowan, Nanette Savard, Mort Shelby, and Kate Torrey. Additional red shirts by the Dead Giveaways. Featuring music by Johann Detweiler, Aaron Miller, Nathaniel Perry, and Chris Rowan. Doomsday Warrior is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1986, Ryder Severson. Production copyright 2007, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers, James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Doomsday Warrior, be sure to look for Don Pendleton's Stony Man and James Axler's Deathlands. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll also find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free screensavers, desktops, ringtones, and games.